Accession number 27308, Reel 11.
Willow Walsh, Reel 11.
Yep, okay. Well, as I said, you'd get a phone call. It would be, oh, Ron, look, it's my little girl's birthday today. Could you let so-and-so ashore, or Bert or George? In other words, they were after, and I used to say, yeah. Mainly, I was duty most of the time, because if I didn't normally do a sub for a bloke and say, you can push off ashore. So I said to the captain, I said, oh, I'm a bit of a member. I said, I'm getting cane for subs and looking out for the RAs and all that. I said, and there's nothing interesting. I said, I don't want to go ashore and get drunk or anything like that. And he said, right. He said, how long you got to do? I said, I'm out here for a year. I got about another 5 months or so yet. He said, well, I'll tell you what, he said, I'll have a word and see if I can get you a better draft, he said, but I'm not promising anything. I said, oh, that's fine, you know. So anyway, that was it. About less than a week later, he sent for me. He said, look, I've got you a draft. I said, oh, have you? He said, yeah. He said, Far East. I said, oh, nice, Far East. What has? He said, well, he said, you're going on the St. Bride's Bay, a frigate out there. She's based in Singapore. He said, she's in dock at the moment, but you won't be going for another couple of months, he said, but does that suit you? I said, oh, yeah, that's fine. And I can stick another couple of months. He said, it may be a bit more. He said, but what'll happen then? He said, is when you're ready, they'll send for you. You leave here, you go to Pompey Barracks, and then he said, you fly straight out to Singapore and join the St. Bride's Bay. Oh, lovely, lovely. So I thought, right, now I've got to do something here. I had a car, Hillman Minks. And I thought after a little, less than a few days after, I thought, well, I don't want to get caught out, so I'll go into Valletta in the morning and I'll put my car in for sale. So I'm not stuck with it, you see. So the next morning, about 9 o'clock, I was going in, and as I was going ashore, I saw the postman, our postman, and he had his bag, his mail bag with him, and I said, where are you going? He said, oh, I'm going in the Valletta for the mail. I said, oh, I'm going in Valletta to plug the car. I'll give you a lift. Oh, that's fine. He said, I'll come with you. He said, oh, that's lovely. So he jumps in the car, and we're heading down Mano Island to get out the dockyard. It was a bit of a run down, about half a mile to Salim up front. And we're going down there, and right at the bottom there, there's a Jenny Wren in whites, in her old uniform, you know, in white rig and all that. And I said to matey, I said, here, I never had a Jenny Wren in this car. I said, and there's one there. He said, yeah. I said, I'll try her and see if I can get her in. He said, I bet you a quid you don't. So I said, all right, we'll see. So I got down, I lowered the window, and I said, hey, Jenny, where are you going? She said, I'm going shopping. I said, oh, we're going into Valletta, and we'll give you a lift in. She said, no, I ain't got that much money. She said, no, and so anyway, I said, I got out, and I opened the back door. I said, get in, you're going to Whitehall Mansions, you say? Yeah, yeah, I've got to go to Whitehall Mansions. That's where we're based. I said, well, we're going by there, we'll drop you there. She said, I've got to go and get some money if I'm going in. I said, all right, then. So we stopped at Whitehall Mansions. She went in, came out, and off we went to Valletta. Well, I spent the rest of the afternoon and the day with her in a coffee shop, and in Valletta, pottering around. And I thought, well, no, I don't need to sell the car just yet. So I arranged a date with her, and that was fair enough. I brought her back, and forever after, every other night, or whenever I wasn't duty, I was ashore with her, and that was, it was good. Oh, you know, got on well. And then up cropped a trip to to the Red Sea with just the... We went out for about 10 days to, just the Woodbridge Haven, not off we went to down the Med into through the Suez Canal, and halfway down the Red Sea it turned into Aqaba. A lovely little place in there. Very interesting place. We got in there, we had about 5 days to spend in Aqaba. Great big bay, and then and there wasn't much to do for the lads, you know. It was a bit boring. So on the third day, or second or third day, the first lieutenant, he said to me, we were on the upper deck, he said, "The captain thinks that the lads are getting bored." I said, "Oh, yeah. What do you want me to do about it then?" He said, "Well, he suggests that you should arrange shark fishing and entertain them that way." "Oh, yeah," I said, "a shark fishing. And who's going to catch them?" He said, "Well, you." He said, "Now listen," he said, "it's been thought out." He said, "You've got the electric winch there." He said, "We got shark hooks in the store, and you can get a whacking great lump of beef from the butcher." So he said, "What's the problem?" I said, "Okay then, I'll rig it up." I said, "We'll do a shark fishing arrangement in the morning at 9 o'clock. And mind you, the sharks were all around us. They used to hang around for anything you slung over. In fact, it seemed to me too easy. I said, "Well, I look at them," I said. He said, "Well, that's up the aisle." So I got round the ship. There was going to be a shark fishing the next day. 9 o'clock, I goes up. They're all there. And I took the wire from the electric winch, and I took it up through a snatch block at the top of a davit hanging over. Turned the davit out over the side of the ship. Took wire from the winch up through a snatch block, and then brought it down to the deck, and then attached this great big shark hook on the end of it, and then plonked on that a great lump of beef that the butcher had sent up. So there I was, I had this lot hanging over the side about 6 feet from the water, and I said to matey on the winch, "I said, lower away." Down comes the meat went down into the water, and then there was a scurry, and away went then. And I said, "All right, let it go then." And he let the winch run out, and this shark had grabbed this lot, hardly had got underneath the water. And I thought, "Oh, there, now what's the next move?" So anyway, I said, "All right," when it had run out a bit, I said, put a brake on. I said, "Right, heave in slowly." He heaved in. In came the old line, wrapping around. And then this old snout of this shark came out the water. Oh, it was wicked, because we were only about 10 or 12 feet on the deck from the water's edge. And this great thing came out, and I let them all it away until it was hanging from the davit head. It was about 6 or 8 foot long, great big shark. And I thought, "Oh, what do I do now?" And then someone said, "Well, you've got to wrestle, let it come inboard, wrestle with it and pull the hook out of its gob." I said, "Oh, are you volunteering?" He said, "No, it's your job. You're in charge." So anyway, I had this shark hanging up there, and the first lieutenant come over. He said, "Hey, Buffer," he said, "it looks like your problem's solved." I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Well, look at that lot." And over, coming from the shore, which wasn't very far away, were these little boats paddling away like hell. And the Arabs came up, and they came. I said, "Let them in." He said, "Yeah, let them in." I said, "All right, we put a ladder over the side." They came inboard. "Right, we'll take over." You know, obviously they'd done it before. And the next thing, they had the old Sharko on the deck. They were splitting it down up into lumps, and dishing out all its teeth to the lads who were grabbing the teeth. And then the shark was put in boats and away. And then they come back. When we'd got that done, there was some more hanging around. Now they said, "Hey, do no," I said, "we don't know more." And then there was demand for more, so we said, "We'll do one more." And we did one more. We loaded it up. And same again. It wasn't very clever. Straight in the water, grab them. This one was a bigger one. Anyway, the forenoon had gone then. It was interesting. They took all that lot ashore, left us the teeth. All we had to do was rig hoses and scrub down all the muck and that. And that was it. And then we went back from Aqaba. We had an interesting time there. We went back into the Red Sea, turned up north, and back into the Med, and eventually back into Malta, alongside again. Of course, I'd lost a few days then, but we made up for it, this Wren and I. And then we were talking, the captain again. I thought, well, I only got about a month left now. So anyway, we were talking this. He says to me, he said, how are you doing? And he said, everything all right? I said, oh, yeah, lovely. He said, he said, you'll soon be on your way now. He said, a little while. I said, oh, yeah. I said, I'll tell you what, though, sir. I said, I met a lovely wren ashore. I said, and we're getting on fine. I was wondering. He said, don't even mention it. Don't even mention it. You're going to Singapore. He said, the absence will do you both the world of good. 6 or 7 months out there, and you'll know if it's right or wrong. So on your way to Singapore. And that was it. I clued up at Singapore on the St. Bride's Bay. Well, I was out there, I suppose. I didn't like it out there. I wanted to get back, really, to, what's it? And I'd been on there about two or three months. And I got the buzz that the captain of that ship had been a bit crafty. When he went out there, he'd managed to get more of the senior rates than he really needed. So I promptly smacked in a request for relief, which he gave me. No bother. So I clued up after about 6 months or so back in Portsmouth. And then it was renewed with this Wren, who I eventually married, and is still married to her today. Yeah, so I came back and that was it. Next thing was I got a draft to Lochinvar up in Scotland as coxswain of one of these sweepers, the ton-class sweepers, HMS Wiston. It was the first of that, so there were lots of them, Wiston, and I got coxswain of that one. That was inshore minesweeping. We had double L sweeps, which I explained were electric. We also had the ordinary water sweeps. We did a bit of that. On her for a while, and then we took her down to Chatham, paid her off, and commissioned the Coniston. And the Coniston was a new one. We took her back up to there, and we carried on up in Lochinvar.
What's the duties of the coxswain?
Eh?
What's the duties of a coxswain?
Well, the coxswain on the wheel all the time, he's required on the wheel. I mean, going in and out of harbour, going anywhere important, the coxswain's on the wheel. Of course, at sea, he can be relieved that coming in again, he's on the wheel. He also regulates the daily routine of the crew. He's the captain's or the CO's number one, really. That's all.
What about steering the ship? Is there anything you need to know about steering a ship?
No, not really. I mean, you're given a course to steer and you turn the wheel and the compass needle moves to that course and that's it. You just got to learn to do that. But when you're going in and out of harbour or through the Suez Canal where it's a bit, you've got to have someone on there who you can blame if anything goes wrong. And it's always the coxswain who obviously should know the job and should be able to do it properly. Other than that, that was them two, the Wiston and the Coniston. And then I went back to, back to Pompey. I got another draft. By then I'd had enough. I'd got married and I put in for a married accompanied or an accompanied draft so that I could have a bit of time. And I was given seamanship instructor on the old Unicorn, which was a wooden wall like the Victory. She's, well, I think, the oldest one afloat or near. second to the Trincomalee, and I got this unicorn, was based in Dundee, alongside. In fact, while I was on her, she was moved from one base to another for the first time in over 25 years. And they were a bit alarmed, but she managed it. And she, when they did something in the base, she had to be moved. Anyway, I was on her. I was seamanship instructor on there. They were all Royal Naval Reserves training ship, R&R training ship. The captain was a Dundee businessman, and it was all sort of civilian. And the one, my boss was a Lieutenant Commander RN, who was the first lieutenant, and obviously on the ship all the time, ran it. He was the big white chief, as regards, from my point of view, you know what I mean? Anyway, two or three nights a week, or through the week, I used to go, and I had a nice little bungalow at Carnoustie, quite near. At a bungalow, and my young son and my wife, we were on a shore base. It was lovely. Dundee, Carnoustie, and I was promised that, as I just said, for 18 months or so. And I lived there nicely for about 9 or 10 months when I was told I had a draft, if I wanted it, to Bahrain on the Anjou. That's when I decided, with the wife, I said, what do I do? And we decided that if I jumped on that and got out there, probably got my chief's rate a lot quicker than I would have done. So I did that. And I found myself in Bahrain, unaccompanied, on HMS Anjou. Now, the Anjou was a tank landing ship. And she had the big open doors for it, you know, the big doors that open and the ramp went down. And we could take, it was the biggest of that type. One of the biggest, they were all different ones. You had tank landing ship, TLIs, infantry, that was crew and men and that. But we could take 6 to 8 tanks and a number of lorries and other equipment, small equipment. We could load up with all that lot and a load of army personnel as well. And what we used to do, what she did there, we were alongside the big long mole in Bahrain. You had a big long concrete mole, and we laid alongside there. And what we did is every so often we went out on patrols, on exercises. These exercises involved the army would come down the mole in force, tanks, army lorries, tanks, everything, motorbikes, all sorts. They would come down the jetty and our doors would be open and we'd load them up, usually the lorries and small stuff at the sides and the tanks down the middle, straight drive them over the between the bow doors, straight down the middle, maybe 6 or 8 tanks along there. So that we could have then a full tank load of army equipment, and army personnel used to stay on the upper deck. Now, when this happened, a four-ring captain used to come down from... Now, our captain was a commander. He was junior. He was only a commander. But we had a four-ring captain who used to come down for that exercise only. And he was in charge of the army operation. And I was his backup as a buffer. I went straight in with him. Forget the upper deck that was taken over by someone else, another PO or whatever. But I worked with this captain down below. And so we'd go down the gulf, find a nice landing, desert landing strip, whatever, shoot up to the beach, roll the old tanks and everything off onto the desert. And the army buds would go off with them, and that was it. They'd be away, maybe exercising all day, load them up in the evening, may go down a bit further. They might be on there 2 or 3 days, actually, and then we'd do it all again and come back. And when we were doing that, it was interesting because, while they were doing their exercise and I was on the deck, on the tank deck, we used to natter and talk about it. This captain was a very nice bloke. Anyway, sometimes we'd go down as far as Aden and all round Aden and come back. And this went on and on for a while. And towards the end of the time there, after about 6 months or so, we were out on a court, on an exercise, and the four-ring captain said to me, "Well, we'll be back shortly, but your time out here is beginning to come to an end. Do you know that?" I said, "Well, I ain't got a clue." He said, "Well, it is. Won't be doing a match of this together again." He said, "Now," he said, "it's just one thing I'm not sure of." He said, "You're a PO." I said, "Yeah." He said, "Well, this ship should have a cheap PO." "Why is that then? Why are you a PO?" I said, "Well," I said, "I was sent out here from the job I was in. I was sent out here to be the cheap PO." He said, "Oh, yeah." He said, "Well," he said, "you've been out here long enough. Well, why aren't you then? Why aren't you a chief?" He said, "This is a chief's job." I said, "Yeah." I said, "Well, what happened," I said, "is I've been on here a couple of weeks, and the coxswain's, you know," I said, "he told me sort of, you know, confidentially, your B-31's on board." That was the authorization to rate up. He said, "Your B-31's on board, so stand by for, you know." I said, "It didn't happen. We went out and did another exercise. We came back in, and then all of a sudden I was told captain's requestment." I thought, "Well, that's fine. My chief's rate, yeah, goes up." And he came straight to the point. He said, "I've got your B-13 on board," he said, "but I'm not recommending you." He said, "I'm sending your B-31 back. Not recommended." I said, "Oh, yeah." He said, "Have you got anything to say about that?" I said, "Well, yes, sir." I said, "I was sent out here to be rated up." I said, "And you don't proposed to rate me up for some reason." I said, "So I presume that I will now be relieved by a chief PO and go back to the UK. He said, "Oh, no, no." He said, I'm quite satisfied with your work." He said, "But I'm not prepared to recommend you." So he said, "You'll carry on as a PO until we get back to the UK," which we were then getting towards the end, you know. So, anyway, this captain on this next occasion, that was somebody, he said to me, "Why aren't you a chief PO? How come you're still a PO doing this job?" And I said, "Well," I explained that I'd been told that and my B-31 had gone back. He said, "Oh, is that so?" He said, and we got back the next morning, actually, unloaded, and it should have been captain's rounds at 12 o'clock. That was deck rounds, so you were supposed to have had everything scrubbed out and everything by then, and ship shape. The captain did the rounds at usually about 11 o'clock. But this particular morning, they piped that rounds would be an hour later. And the coxswain said to me, he came round, he said, "They put it off hour." He said, "The CO's been got a report up then to Dufair, the base, and see the captain up there." I said, "Oh, has he?" He said, "Yeah." Anyway, he said, "With that," I said, "at 12 o'clock, they put captain's CO's requestment." I went up and he said, "Rated up chief PO as from the day my B-31 came in." So I said, "I finished off my job out there as chief PO."
Was there any reason why he hadn't recommended you?
Yeah, I think there was a good reason. If you go back into my record, let's say, which I think enabled me to write my autobiography, I deserted in 1938 from a ship. When I did that, the day I deserted, and I was outside about 12, 14 months or something, they put an R alongside my HMS Glasgow, joined on so-and-so, and where it said left, they put an R, a written R, which meant run. And if you deserted, they put that on there, run. When I came back in, and I presented myself, I played my cards right, and I got a king's pardon. Now, the Commodore Barrett said to me at the time, well, I'm quite satisfied with what you've told us. We've got a war on. We need your blokes, so I'm going to give you a king's pardon. That means that the R will be removed from your service documents and you will carry on with your own official number that you had originally. You'll just carry on as though nothing happened. So I thought, oh, that's fine. And that, I was under that impression. There was also another occasion when I was in, I left the Bulldog, I explained to you, where I was with them people when they were apprehended, and I had to leave the Bulldog and stay in Liverpool until the Assizes. When the Assizes came up, we were dismissed, I and my mate. We were witnesses, and we were, the others were weighed up, and we were dismissed, witnesses. I said, but on my papers, for the 2 weeks that I was in Walton jail, and the other week when we were in Strangeways waiting for this to come up, they recorded on my service documents CP, which meant civil police. Not, it shouldn't have been, because we were witnesses. We weren't charged, we weren't charged or awarded any punishment. But they had on there civil police. So I'd had 2 whacks of civil police, and also the way they removed the R on my papers was not to invisibly get rid of it, but just to write underneath, removed according to Admiralty Fleet order, and 2 lines through the R. So it was there for everyone to see. Every ship I went to, they saw that. They also saw, they didn't see the result of it, but they saw that. And they also saw the 2 lots of CP. So I presume that this captain, and I had a couple of other occasions where I did have the same sort of thing, but it came off all right. But I think this captain had gone through my, when I joined the ANZIO, and my papers followed a week or so later, and he looked at it and said, oh God, what have I got here? And he thought, well, if he'd done that, I'm not recommending him. So he didn't. But I came off best anyhow.
So where was your next drafting as a after the ANZIO?
The ANZIO, we finished off there. It was quite a trip. She was only about 10 knots when we got out, very slow. But we went to Bombay, had a little bit of a dicky refit in Bombay. And then we steamed down into the Pacific to the Seychelles Islands. The Seychelles was lovely because most ships that went there, they had to anchor out, and then they got to run ashore with the boat. We, being flat-bottomed, and we could go right up to the beach and drop our ramp and walk ashore. So we had a week or so in Seychelles. It was really marvellous. And we had that. And then we went from there to Mombasa, east coast of Africa. The senior rates then were offered a free fortnight up the coast in a British-run hotel, and 4 of us went up there and had it all free for another week, sunbathing off the beach and all that lot, swimming off the beach, watching out for the sharks, because they were there as well, but we kept well clear of them. And it was all together, it was quite nice. We then left Mombasa, called in at Djibouti on North Africa on the way through the Suez, went through the Suez Canal, the Mediterranean to Malta. In Malta, paid off and flew home. So I left her in Malta.